Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dan Tenglerini, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Management and Chief Financial Officer. Also joining us from IBM is Roxanne Ulrich. Dan, the department launched a new performance management process led by the Deputy Secretary and coordinated through his office. Would you tell us more about this process and the performance management framework you are using to drive performance, deliver on results, and improve the overall performance culture at Treasury?
I think this comes back to this core management responsibility, and that is to understand what it is you do, understand what the issues that the people who are focused on that work have, worry about the resources they have to get that done, set some goals, stretch goals, push people to see what they can, you know, how they can do more, how they can do it more efficiently, see if they can do it differently, see if they can do it in partnership with other people. And then, like the instructions on shampoo, lather, rinse, repeat. You come back and ask, what did we get wrong? What did we get right? What should we do different? Mm-hmm. I think that that's really what we're trying to do, is create this sense that you're not going to get away with it. you can't hold your breath and hope for, you know, the transition of, you know, the endless kind of churn in the political class to overtake the concern. And what we're hoping actually to do with this is institutionalize this approach to managing the agency such that whoever's deputy secretary, whoever's ASM CFO, will just take it on faith that this is the way we do this in the Department of Treasury.
Are you using analytics and data more nowadays to improve performance?
Absolutely. The mistake people have is to think that performance management is about a dashboard, or it's about that it's just about the data. In fact, it's really about that strong relationship between the people who set executive direction and the people who discharge that responsibility. It's that accountability relationship. But in order to inform the people who have to set executive direction, the people who have to make decisions, you need good data. And you need good analysis of that data. You need to be able to ask the questions like the improper payment question. What is generating? Where are most of the improper payments come from? And then create initiatives and activities that can then focus on those activities to try to reduce the number of improper payments as a result. So then you need to have good data to say, what did we have as a result before? What are we getting as a result after? And has our interaction had an effect? Then you have to be mature enough to say, no, it's not having an effect, so we'll stop it. Or, wow, it's really having a great effect, let's do more. And that's where the resource comes in. Can we push more chips across the table on the things that are effective and take chips away, frankly, from the things that aren't?
Looking at an annual IT budget of over $3 billion, would you elaborate on how the department has strengthened its IT capital investment process to assure that investment decisions are mission-aligned and cost-justified, and what would remain to be done?
I think the way you strengthen the IT capital process is not think that it's a standalone process. So the problem with an IT capital process that is just an IT capital process is then it becomes disconnected from mission, it becomes disconnected from the broader resource discussion. IT is there to provide simpler, faster, better ways of delivering outcomes. It's the outcomes that are important. The IT is in service of that. And I think it's a mistake I've seen over and over in many of my different government jobs is that, and I frankly hear that it's a problem outside the government too, is that people think that the IT is the outcome. You know, that new system, that upgrade of this, that's the outcome. It really has to be posited and grounded in something you're trying to accomplish, something measurable, something that has a strong business case. And that's why the work, again, of Jeff Zients and Vivek Kundra around focusing on chunking our investments down into things that we can see, feel, and touch, and making business cases for each incremental investment, I think is such an important discipline to bring into the federal government. We've spent a lot of time, again, with Deputy Secretary Wolin, these quarterly reviews, asking the question about how can we deliver services more efficiently. And that question always comes back to what can we do in terms of our IT systems to make our interaction, say, with consumers simpler? How do we improve web interactions? How do we improve the business process? How do we reduce process steps? And so I think that the IT capital investment approach and process has to be really rooted in what you're trying to get as an outcome in the way of agency, of an agency. And as a result of that discussion, we have become increasingly concerned about the ratio of our IT spend that's on maintenance versus CapEx, that's on reinvestment. And I think that that is a bigger global, you know, red flare we have to send up for the federal government in general, particularly as we focus on additionally constrained resources. We need to make sure we don't crowd out the kind of modernization and systems improvements that are going to build us the kind of government that's going to let us win the future, that's going to let us be the government we need to have in the 21st century. So that's a bigger set of questions that we have to work at the OMB level, the cross-agency level, and certainly at the congressional level.
I think along the lines of, speaking of efficiencies, Treasury requires multiple data centers that are geographically dispersed and mutually supportive. Given your efforts around infrastructure modernization, would you elaborate on your continued data center consolidation efforts, the key challenges, the benefits, and making that happen?
Again, the data center consolidation, I think, again, huge props to Vivek Kundra and OMB for pushing this issue. I think it's a bigger issue. And this is kind of a very high-level specific example of it. And that is kind of the broader issue we have about real estate management in the federal government in general. We have 42 data centers that we identified in the Department of Treasury. And I say we identified because prior to this initiative led by OMB, we didn't have a definition, a common definition. We didn't have a number. If you had asked us how many we had, someone would have used their own assumptions and come up with some kind of number. Using the common assumptions, we've now been able to start benchmarking against other federal agencies. And that's really where I think collectively agencies can begin to improve the way they deliver services, is understanding the relative cost of one to the other, and then our cost versus the private sector. We have a plan to get down to 29, so 42 to 29 by 2015, but that's just a start. What we need to do is start better understanding how our systems interrelate, how our systems can work together, how we could maybe move some of our systems out of data centers that we own and control and into, you know, what they call the cloud. Are there overlapping systems? Are there ways that we can share our systems with others, like our HR Connect system we're working with a couple other federal agencies to see if that's something that they can leverage? It's a bigger set of conversations, and it gets really interesting and really complex really fast. But it all comes down to, how do we deliver more efficient services for the federal taxpayer? How do we reduce the backshop footprint of our federal agencies? And how do we focus our bureaus and our components not on owning data centers, but actually managing data and delivering services?
Well, Dan, I want to talk about the ranking. I believe Treasury is ranked 12th recently on the best places to work
in
government, and going up.
And
it's one of the significant improvements. So actually, you mentioned earlier about the importance of people to the execution of your critical mission, and the fact that the ranking for Treasury has increased year over year quite significantly. Would you elaborate on your efforts to improve hiring processes? And in particular, could you tell us about some of the key points related to the hiring reform initiative you're pursuing?
So I think hiring processes and hiring reform are one component of it, but I'd like to come back more to the ranking, because that's really about people who are there. Mm-hmm. You know, Secretary Geithner likes to say he grew up in the Treasury Department, that he essentially started his federal career there. He was there a long time, worked his way up from a career person to being the secretary. He's deeply committed to the institution. When I told him, listen, we are one of the top two agencies for increasing our relative position in the EVS ranking, I said, we went from 15th to 12th. He said, why aren't we number one? That is really the charge from Secretary Geithner. Deputy Secretary Wolin really works this issue with the bureaus. We are deeply committed to providing the environment that people will rank it as the number one agency to work. Now, we think our issues are, if they're not number one, they're tied for number one with some of the other big issues that the country are facing. And we think it's an amazing institution with tremendous history. And if you're going to be in public service, there are few other places where you can have as much of an impact. And what we need to do as organizational leaders is provide people that sense of connection, that sense of mission, and that sense that they are being supported and delivering those services. We want to keep the great people at the Treasury Department as long as we can, you know, we can keep them. You know, so we have to not just do a good job in hiring and recruiting, we need to do a good job in re-recruiting and retaining. And that means investing in people's skills, investing in training, investing in equipment, technology, investing in people's ideas and finding ways that we can engage them in dialogue and give them a sense that they own a share in the Treasury Department and that they'll be committed to making it as good as it possibly can be. On the hiring side, that's a very important issue because of the long talked about but soon arriving kind of demographic wave of retirement that we're going to see across the federal government. By some estimates, a third to a half of our people are eligible to retire in the next 5 years. The leadership class, the SES and the GS-15, those numbers come in a couple years. Those numbers are more dramatic in the 2, 3, 4 years. And so the question is, what are we doing to make sure that as we re-recruit and retain our current highly qualified employees, that we give them opportunities to move up, and then we're finding really smart and clever ways to reach out to expanding populations to give them opportunities in the Treasury Department and let them see what a cool place it is to work in the Treasury Department. Doing a lot of work with VA around hiring veterans, and we've had some great progress there, trying to expand opportunities for disabled Americans. And we've set one of the highest kind of results against our goals in that area. And I think that that's a really important effort, partnering up with the Office of Personnel Management and again OMB to find ways that we can simplify the hiring process. We've done the Lean Six analysis of our hiring process, used data out of the our HR Connect system to find out where the process takes a long time. But one of the things we have to recognize is you can speed that process up. You can make it virtually instantaneous. The speed of the process isn't as important as the outcome. We want to have the highest quality, best fit people for our jobs. And so one of the things we are trying to do is get our hiring managers, get the people who are going to be accountable for working with those people, supporting those people, and getting the work product out and with those people involved, deeply involved in that process and making sure that they own the outcome as well.
Yeah. You've mentioned data a couple of times, and it's interesting because I want to transition to the Open Government Directive, which is really asking the federal agencies to be transparent and get that data out there. And your department, Treasury, has really done a great job of doing that. And I believe it was Leading Practices Award for Participation and Collaboration, if I'm correct. Would you tell us about some of the things you're doing in response to the Open Government Directive?
I think the Open Government Directive is just kind of the outward-facing set of questions that we've been asking internally. What do we know? What do we have in the way of information? And while we take it and try to turn it and twist it and look at it and so that we can try to answer the questions we have, we think we have a responsibility to provide data to the public so that they can do the same thing themselves. We just went through a big effort to redo our website, moving the hosting into the cloud, building this back-end system that actually allows for stronger collaboration, easier access of putting data onto the website. And one of the interesting parts about that is there is, right when you go to the homepage, I invite you to go to treasury.gov, there's what we call the data center. And that's where we're pushing as much data as we possibly can. We give kind of a graph of the week or a graph of the month so that people can see some of the ways we ask and answer questions. But then we try to make that a repository for providing information. We have a Web 2.0 component to it too, a Twitter feed, YouTube, so that not classic hard data tables and whatnot, but soft data in terms of kind of interactive description of everything that's happening in the Treasury Department at any given time so people can kind of, you know, if you're a Treasury groupie, you can follow from home and try to give people some sense that this is their Treasury Department. that we possess their data. The data that's theirs in private, we're going to do everything we can to make sure it's private. So that's a big component of our open government effort, is actually also around data security and privacy. But that we also are going to try very hard to make data available to people, researchers, thoughtful people, journalists, that they can get a good sense of what's happening in an area that is so important and meaningful for everyone's daily life. As part of that, we focused again through a Lean Six Sigma process on improving our FOIA process. We think that that's really important, that people feel like there's a fair, transparent, and frankly, fast process for getting their logical petitions to their government answered and responded to in a fair way. We've pushed down our FOIA backlog quite substantially. We are making investments around an enterprise content management system so that we have a stronger way of compiling in an electronic format that information that people will ask about. And we've created a FOIA reading room. We're working to make it possible for people to submit FOIA requests electronically. So you don't, no more faxing things back and forth, and we can have a dialogue with the way that, frankly, most people are having dialogues now around these things, although we will continue to accept U.S. Postal Service deliveries. And in trying to make sure that people feel a real sense of trust and faith that the Treasury Department will be as honest and open and transparent as it possibly can be. And we were pleased that we did receive a reward for our efforts around that.
What does the future hold for the U.S. Department of the Treasury? We will ask Dan Tenglerini, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Management and Chief Financial Officer, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.